Since the 1920s, American eugenicists had been jealous because the Germans had taken leadership of the movement away from them. The Germans were admirably progressive. They set up ordinary-looking houses where mental defectives were brought and interviewed one at a time, before being led into a back room, which was, in fact, a gas chamber. There they were gassed with carbon monoxide and their bodies disposed of in a crematorium located on the property. Eventually, this program was expanded into a vast network of concentration camps located near railroad lines, enabling the efficient transport and killing of 10 million undesirables. After World War II, nobody was a eugenicist, and nobody had ever been a eugenicist. Biographers of the celebrated and the powerful did not dwell on the attractions of this philosophy to their subjects, and sometimes did not mention it at all. Eugenics ceased to be a subject for college classrooms, although some argue that its ideas continue to have currency in disguised form. But in retrospect, three points stand out. First, despite the construction of Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory, despite the efforts at universities and the pleadings of lawyers, there was no scientific basis for eugenics. In fact, nobody at that time knew what a gene really was. The movement was able to proceed because it employed vague terms, never rigorously defined. Feeble-mindedness could mean anything from poverty and illiteracy to epilepsy. Similarly, there was no clear definition of degenerate or unfit. Second, the eugenics movement was really a social program masquerading as a scientific one. What drove it was concern about immigration and racism and undesirable people moving into one's neighborhood or country. Once again, vague terminology helped conceal what was really going on. Third, and most distressing, the scientific establishment in both the United States and Germany did not mount any sustained protest. Quite the contrary. In Germany, scientists quickly fell into line with the program. Modern German researchers have gone back to review Nazi documents from the 1930s. They expected to find directives telling scientists what research should be done. But none were necessary. In the words of Uta Dyckmann, scientists, including those who were not members of the Nazi Party, helped to get funding for their work through their modified behavior and direct cooperation with the state. Dyckmann speaks of the active role of scientists themselves in regard to Nazi race policy, where research was aimed at confirming the racial doctrine. No external pressure can be documented. German scientists adjusted their research interests to the new policies, and those few who did not adjust disappeared.